Hey patrons, and welcome to the audio Q&A for weekly number 290. This month, there were 23 questions from 11 different patrons. Firstly, in our continuing chess match, Radiant Chaos says, I shall nudge my pawn to d3. Will Castlehead retreat? Once again, in the weekly text, I will include a picture of the current board state. And my Castlehead will get out of the way, but I wouldn't quite call it a retreat. I will move my rook to g4. Next, DePresbian asks, how was your day? I am feeling tired but happy that the cleric seems to be going over well. Tired both due to Christmas prep and also cleric release stuff and dealing with the mountain of emails and all of those things. I haven't really started taking a break yet. I'm recording this on the 23rd, by the way, and so hopefully I will feel a little more rested after about a week or so. But for now, tired but happy. Next up, we have a doozy of a question from Rainuva. Could you share your reaction to this video, specifically the sections regarding the video game industry, rather than the specifics of the subject game? So I'll provide a link to the video essay if people want to watch the whole thing, but the very quick in a nutshell version is this is a YouTuber praising the game Warframe and its developers Digital Extremes, which happen to live in London, Ontario, and it's essentially talking about how Digital Extremes' engagement with their players and reasonably ethical monetization of the live service game Warframe and their policy for continually expanding and iterating on the game should be lauded, and it's a shame that more developers don't act this way. So I'm going to respond to two things quickly here. Firstly, the picking of Warframe in particular. I largely agree with this YouTuber's position on Warframe and Digital Extremes. I actually did play Warframe a few years ago. I ended up falling off after getting through all the story content. This was right before the new war released. I never played the new war. And I enjoyed the time I spent with the game, but once I started moving past the story stuff and moving on to more of the deep understanding mastery of the game mechanics, the game just kind of felt too design bloated for me. That's hardly a damning criticism. Shattered Pixel Dungeon is in many ways very design bloated too. But it was for me a great game to play through the story, but not to stick around with and, you know, max out my level and mastery as well, sorts of things. And it is worth noting this is opinion is from many years ago, and it's possible Digital Extremes has improved on things since then. So I have a generally very positive impression of Warframe and its developers. I will say as one caveat to their monetization, I still don't like it when games let you purchase any in-game advantage at all, but I realize that that's not really the landscape we live in. And a game that just lets you do that but reasonably balances it with people who want to earn their way through gameplay is pretty good, relatively speaking. I'll also say that I do think that the YouTuber kind of portrays it almost like Digital Extremes is unique in this regard. And I do think more developers should be like this, but I do also think there's plenty of examples, especially if you go to indie or mid-tier studios. They even mention Baldur's Gate 3 as a great example. Just to quickly list off a few other examples, I think Deep Rock Galactic, Path of Exile, and Old School RuneScape are all great live service game examples. You can also look at lots of indies where there is some developers take a policy of releasing a game for a cost and then making continual free content expansions. Domekeeper comes to mind. There's lots of examples of this, but I do think that Digital Extremes is a good one to point to. I've already been talking about this for 2 minutes and I haven't even gotten to the meat of it. I could probably make my own half hour video essay on this. But I guess to more quickly get to the main point, the specific attitudes that this YouTuber has towards the game industry and the thing you want me to really talk about is I'm going to paraphrase here and I might miss the point slightly, but essentially the YouTuber is trying to argue that Digital Extremes and their attitudes towards Warframe are an example that the rest of the industry should follow, and that this is how we engage players and create great sustained games that last for a decade and all of these other things. And specifically, he talks about both the monetization and also community engagement and frequent content updates and taking in feedback. And I wonder if you may have asked this question and used this essay in particular, because perhaps some of those points make you think of my development of Shattered, or at least I would hope they do, because I tried to do some of those things too. Unfortunately, I think the video kind of misses a really large, important detail when it comes to the games industry. This YouTuber is talking about creating great experiences and engaging players and all of and making great sustainable games as if that's what the big decision makers in the games industry want to do, and they don't. obviously, developers, people who are actually on the ground making the games, by and large, do. But the decision makers, the CEOs, the corporate heads who make the large decisions are purely short-term profit motivated. They don't want to make a 10-year sustainable game. They want to put Skibidi Toilet in Fortnite and make $1 billion today. And so because of that, we rarely see this kind of transparency and attitude and player satisfaction-driven approach for really, really big major games, because it's just not what they're optimizing for. They want their engagement numbers up, and they'll do that by having, you know, psychological manipulation tactics in the game, like dailies and fear of missing out and all those things, because those things are more effective at pumping those numbers than engaging with the player base are. It sucks, but it's the truth that for a majority of this, there is a lot of money to be made, and so a lot of people only care about that. I think that the easiest way I've described it in the past is you sort of look at your goal and your means. What you would want is your goal to be making a great game, and your means, or one of your means, being the revenue. You make money so that you can sustain your development, reinvest, etc. However, very often what happens instead is that the goal is to make as much money as possible, and the means is the video game. And this is obviously not universal, but it gets pretty close to universal when you start looking at major studios. And so I think because of that, we're never going to see a majority of game designers act like digital extremes. But that's okay, because it's partly just the reality of our society, and I know that it starts to get into capitalism and politics, which is beyond the scope of this. But it's also okay because in spite of that, there are developers who take these approaches, and we should, as much as possible, reward them for it. So I know that ended up being a fairly long, rambly answer. I hope I got my point across reasonably there. If you want to ask any follow-ups, please do. I'll be happy to either talk more about this in the next audio Q&A or in text if you prefer a quicker answer. And I think I mentioned this at the beginning of the question, but in case I didn't, please feel free to ask me more of these kind of general design questions in future Q&As if you'd like to. I can't promise every answer will be this long-winded, but I certainly have a lot that I like to say about these sort of things. And speaking of which, I should give the caveat, much as I like to talk about these things, I am still, at the end of the day, one guy on the internet. My opinions are not gospel. And finally, on to the next question, which is a bit of a shift in tone. Terry asks, have you ever heard of a game called Shattered Pixel Dungeon? It's pretty cool. I don't know. Shattered Pixel Dungeon's all right. Kind of looks like a copy of Minecraft, to be honest. Next, Vig asks, are there any changes that you may want to squeeze in with the Cleric's release? I think I've mentioned pretty much everything I want to do with V3.0, which is sort of the Cleric themselves, and then some visual and UI changes and the usual assortment of quality of life and balance. But I'm not really planning on adding any other real game content with V3.0. It's pretty hyper-focused on the Cleric themselves. Next up, Umbras asks, without revealing anything, what is your favorite class story-wise? So, unfortunately, I think I'm going to give a similar answer to last month, where I said that I like all the classes gameplay-wise, and similarly, I really don't have a standout favorite. There are lots of little details I like with all of their work-in-progress backstories that largely exist in my head and have been kind of like drafted down but are not final. I will say, though, as always, he's definitely not my favorite, but I have a bit of a soft spot for the mage. Next up, Ahelos asks a few questions in one. Do you play with challenges, if you play at all? I've mentioned this many times. I don't play the game as much as I should, and when I do, it tends to be targeted. So I don't often do full runs. When I do full runs, it's usually with challenges off, or only maybe one or two on. And I will very rarely play with the more restrictive challenges unless I'm specifically testing something. Then, do you plan on adding new challenges? And if so, will you cap the max amount? I do plan to eventually add challenges. I don't think I'll ever cap the max amount, though, because there will be some crazy people who will want to beat the game with 10 or 11 challenges. And then they say, I know you changed a lot of challenges to remove less stuff a few years back. Would you consider changing some old challenges further to make them feel less like just removing stuff, looking at you, Barren Land? So this is kind of tricky because I already feel like I've changed those challenges as much as I can without compromising their core identity. And so I feel like changing them anymore would essentially just mean taking them out and replacing them with something different. And while I agree that challenges that remove game features aren't nearly as fun as challenges that add them, I also think we are in the unfortunate situation where the 9 challenge world, I guess you could call it, is very, very used to some of these things, and I don't really feel like it would be appropriate to upend everything by taking out things like Faith is My Armor and Pharma and Barren Land, which combine to make for a situation where you really, really have to be stingy with health and healing. And that's a dynamic that lots of high challenge players really like, and it's what makes it so difficult. And so if I were to replace them, it would be very, very difficult to replicate that feeling. And I would rather ultimately spend time just adding new challenges altogether. Then next, Terry asks, follow-up to Ahelos' question, do you plan on making at least one little balance patch centered around playing a high amount of challenges? Because right now the meta is don't play warrior unless you want to have a bad time, particularly with Faith is My Armor, since the armor-based class, warrior just can't use armor. So a whole patch? No. But will I consider a high challenge play when I make targeted changes? Absolutely. I don't want to balance the game against high chal, but I do definitely listen to feedback from very experienced players and take that on board when making adjustments generally, and will occasionally make targeted changes due to that. Like, for example, I've been hearing quite consistently how there's a somewhat of a meta forming around sniper shot and shurikens and using the shared upgrades talent and how that's a little ridiculous. And yeah, I do kind of see where that's coming from. I think perhaps shared upgrades might work a little better if, rather than purely scaling based on the upgrades of the thrown weapon, it worked based instead on the tier or the raw damage of the thrown weapon. And then something like Shuriken, which is always intended to be more utility-focused, wouldn't have the same path to ridiculous damage that an upgraded tier 8 throwable would. For throwables in particular, though, I also would like to eventually make larger scale changes in general because they're not super popular for most players. But that's getting beside the point. And similarly for Warrior, I may eventually make some changes to him because he, even for non-challenge players, is considered very boring by experienced players, at least the base class is. And if I make changes there, and that also helps Warrior in all chal, then great. But I'm not going to make a significant design change to the Warrior specifically because of all challenges. Next, Red Ant Chaos asks, what's something interesting you want to do at some point in your life that you haven't done yet? It's a very open-ended question. I'm honestly not sure. Right now, I'm more thinking about relatively mundane things that I want to do more of, such as read or walk or exercise. A little too much screen time. I don't know, because I suppose when you ask about these things, people generally think of grand experiences, the sort of thing you go on a vacation for. And I'm honestly not sure. I'll have to get back to you on that. Next, Umbra asks, how is the Mushroom Forest quest going, or has that one been scrapped? So it's not been scrapped, it's been shelved, which means that I don't have any current plans for when I'm going to actually implement it, but it will happen at some point. And if not the Mushroom Forest, at least some third variant to the Caves quest. I think at the moment, though, it might make more sense to work on a different quest first to replace the current not quest offered by the Ambitious Imp, or the literal no quest in the Demon Halls. I think that would be a bigger game improvement for the amount of time invested compared to adding another variant to the Caves quest. Next, Veek asks, in what order are you thinking of developing what is left to be done with the cleric? So this will partially depend on how the designs fill out in my head. Sometimes things can be delayed or reprioritized because I'll have a hard time finding an interesting mechanic to place somewhere. I had to do it, but the priest in particular actually ended up getting held back just a day or two because I was having trouble figuring out what would work well for their final spells, and ended up settling on Hallowed Ground and Mnemonic Prayer. That was the fourth take for pronouncing that talent, by the way. specifically, the phrase "and mnemonic prayer" is a little tricky to do. Not quite a tongue twister, but I had some trouble with it. Anyway, moving on. So in that particular case, there was an issue where I had a general idea that I wanted a low-cost spell that interacted with buffs, and also that I wanted some kind of longer-term area of affecting spell, but I had to sort of go through a bunch of ideas in my head before I settled on that. And so similarly, I think the plan is going to be Trinity, then Paladin, then Power of Many. And I'm basing that partially on what I think will fill out the class best, and also partially based on where my ideas are right now. But maybe there's one talent, or one spell talent, I should say, for Trinity that ends up being very difficult to find a good design for, and I end up doing Paladin first, or something like that. Next, Ultra Violet Light asks, would you say the cleric has been harder or easier to implement than the duelist so far? A follow-up, what is the hardest thing you've implemented? So firstly, for the cleric, I'm honestly not sure. Design ways are more complicated, obviously, but I've also had longer to work on their design overall, and the actual update development has gone a bit faster. Obviously, we're kind of in early days, but I'm also reasonably happy with how the cleric's balance has been showing up so far. We'll have to see where the numbers settle, because they're kind of chaotic at the moment. But the very early impression is that a lot of players feel the cleric is super OP, but they're actually not. They might even be a tiny bit weak. And that's not too bad at all as a starting point, frankly, given that I was worried the cleric might be absolutely busted in beta. And as for the hardest thing, I honestly... Design-wise, I think it's probably the Caves Quest. Either the Caves Quest or the Alchemy System, actually. Both of those are good candidates. And the fundamental reason why is because it was just very, very difficult to settle on a good design and finally move forward with it. The Caves Quest went through a lot of iterating, and part of that, and I've talked about this in public blog posts if you want to take a look at those, but essentially I wanted to make a mini game within Shattered Pixel Dungeon, and I still feel like I accomplished that, but it felt a lot more minigame and a lot less Shattered Pixel Dungeon in early iterations, and it wasn't fun. And I kept trying to add more mechanics to find the fun, and the reason for that, of course, was because it was too bare bones and simple. And more it felt like I was putting an entire fleshed out game inside of Shattered Pixel Dungeon, and while the game itself might end up being somewhat fun, that's not really what people signed up for when they played Shattered Pixel Dungeon. And so in the end, I ended up stripping things down a lot more in terms of the unique mechanics, and instead focused on interplaying those mechanics with Shattered Pixel Dungeon. So instead of like a Motherlode style mining minigame where you want to look for all these different ores and you have a time limit, you can only mine so many times or whatever, instead I completely replaced that with your mining time is limited by your hunger meter. And rather than wanting to find all these different types of ores, instead the ability to mine through walls has a lot of interplay with combat mechanics in both of the quest variants right now. And that ended up being a lot more engaging and interesting. And so I'm hopeful now that I've figured that out, that I won't have to take as long with an eventual Dwarf City and Demon Halls quest. But it took a while to figure that out for the Caves quest, even if it sounds simple in retrospect. And then for the alchemy system, it's I've also talked a bunch about that, but it's just the basic idea of wanting to give players more control over their items in various ways, but not wanting to turn the game or turning that aspect of the game into something like Minecraft and just finding the right complexity balance. And once this one was unfortunate because I ended up releasing it in a state where it was a lot more complex than it needed to be, and I have continually had to strip things down and down to finally find a good balance. And I think the current iteration of the system, which is much more heavily driven by alchemical energy instead of by specific recipes, is much better. I don't know if you were around for earlier iterations, but it used to be that alchemical energy was a static resource. Once you spent it, it was gone. And it was there to sort of gate the more powerful recipes. And all recipes had very specific all outputs, I should say, had very specific recipes, especially things like elixirs, brews, and spells. And so I ended up changing that, firstly, to use catalysts instead of really specific things. And then I eventually just stripped the catalysts out entirely and just had energy costs. And I think that's a much better balance for that. So I guess in general, the most difficult things were always when there was very, very large amounts of new design and just trying to figure out exactly how that's going to slot in with the existing game. By comparison, talents were actually relatively easy to do design-wise, and that's probably because being an RPG, that kind of system has been done a million times already, so there are a million very obvious successful examples to pull from, and I had a very good intuition for exactly how that was going to work. Next, Hubertus asks, do you have some ideas for how the Demon Halls quest would look like? So I have very loose ideas, but I'm afraid nothing I'm willing to share just yet. And that's because I have an idea that I think is really cool and exciting, but I need to spend more time deciding on whether it will actually work. See my previous comments about the Caves quest. And so hopefully I'll have more to share about that probably sometime in 2025, but we'll see. But I do definitely have an idea. Next, Block Vader asks, why does the Ring of Energy keep requiring buffs? Honestly, it's because it has a low win rate. The Ring of Energy is sort of interesting in that way, because you would look at it and think that it's already really good because of the uptime it gives you on all these magical items. But you have to remember, especially when it comes to investing upgrades into equipment, the Ring of Energy is competing, especially for something like wands, with just upgrading the wand itself. And that tends to increase charge uptime and recharge speed. And also, of course, if you do more damage and just kill the thing in fewer charges, that also increases charge uptime. So because of that, the Ring of Energy kind of has some stiff competition in that sense, because it's not directly empowering either your ability to deal or take damage. And you'll notice a lot of the other rings in one way or another do that. And in, you know, much, much earlier in Pixel Dungeon, there were a lot more utility rings, and most of those got turned into artifacts. And it was specifically because a lot of these more niche effects were just never going to be worth investing an upgrade in compared to just doing more damage, because damage is really good. And so I think the Ring of Energy is in a similar situation where it's impactful feeling and fun to use and can definitely work, but ultimately, it has to compete with just upgrading a wand, and upgrading wands is really good. I will be very interested to see how powerful the Ring of Energy is with the Cleric and Holy Tome charges. I'm absolutely fine with the Ring of Energy being better for the Cleric than for other heroes. There's other examples of that already. Ring of Sharpshooting and the Huntress is the obvious one. But of course, if it's overwhelmingly powerful for the Cleric specifically, maybe we'll have to tone things back a bit. No idea on that at the moment. There's not enough balance data to say one way or the other. Next up, Hubertus asks, is there any way to become a reviewer through the TransFX page? I see a lot of stuff from almost a year ago that still wait for appeal. Or sorry, approval, rather. So this is more of a question that's appropriate to send me a direct message about. For those who don't know, TransFX is the website we use to host Cheddar Pixel Dungeon's public translation project. I assign reviewers to languages that are mostly translated but unreviewed and don't have any current reviewer activity. But I am willing, if you see a particular language that's languishing, please feel free to let me know and I'll pay a bit more attention to it that way. But yeah, this is because this is more of a translation community structure thing. It's probably better to message me privately about that, either on Discord or TransFX or whatever. Next, Raynuva asks, in the main Pixel Dungeon Discord, you had mentioned the chalice being an artifact of its time, or to some such effect. You mentioned a broad consideration to modernize the artifact. Not looking for anything set in stone, but what are some ideas you might consider? So mainly, I just want to have the artifact have more of an active component, which would make it more consistent in its design with the other artifacts, and also not have the upgrade mechanic be as tied to just sort of guessing how much damage you're going to take, which, let's face it, today just means you're going to go look at the wiki. The chalice is really an artifact of its time because of that. Because back when the Chalice was originally conceived in V2.0, there was no wiki. And there were several artifacts that were very one-to-one replacements for existing rings. And many of those artifacts have since been changed and given more unique gameplay opportunity. Examples say the Horn of Plenty, which is now spectacular at triggering on-eat talent effects. Or the Talisman of Foresight, which, yeah, it helps you detect traps still, but it also has the scanning functionality that's a lot more engaging and active. And so similarly, I would like for the Chalice to be able to do something like that as well and feel more direct and impactful. But it's just sort of escaped that scrutiny because it does still kind of have a bit of an identity to itself with its really expensive upgrades and dangerous upgrades. And it's always been relatively powerful because health is really good. And so because of that, I haven't actually directly changed it yet. And I'm a little hesitant to because I wouldn't want to ruin the identity it does currently have. But broadly speaking, I would want more engaging gameplay involving the Chalice, perhaps an active effect instead of passive health regen or some combination. And I would still want the upgrading to really have bite, but I would maybe shy away a little bit from, oop, you forgot what the number is, you're immediately dead. Because in today's age, that just means someone's going to look it up on the wiki. Next, sort of a combo question. Firstly, Veek asks, will any of the cleric's talents be available for the other heroes through the Scroll of Metamorphosis? And the answer to this is yes. And then Terry immediately says, follow-up to Veek's question, what alternative ability would they have? So I don't have any alternative abilities set in stone, but the general idea is that each of the talents will try to do... firstly, it's only going to be the Tier 1, 2, and 3 talents, which are universal to the Cleric base class, just as with all the other heroes. And it will really be circumstantial depending on the talent. I think a lot of them have very obvious conversions, though. Like, for example, satiated spells. Instead of giving shielding based on a cleric spell, maybe you'll get shielding next time you use a wand or artifact. Some of them are a little more tricky, but generally they will have some kind of passive variant of the current effect. Again, one might be Searing Light, where you get bonus damage on Guiding Light. Perhaps that bonus damage would instead change to a trigger based on wand zaps. Or perhaps artifact use as well, to keep in theme with the cleric being able to work with either. For a more complex example, perhaps the Bless spell would give the player a very small passive accuracy and evasion boost. There's lots of different specific things. I'm not probably going to, because Metamorphosis is always sort of designed as kind of being a bit wacky and niche, I'm not going to probably sweat too much about making all of the designs engaging. But there will be some kind of passive variant effect for all of the spells that the other classes can access. Next, Radiant Chaos asks, any New Year's resolutions? I'm still thinking about that sort of thing, no solid ones yet. It's worth noting that I don't like resolutions themselves because the whole mentality of I'm going to do this and if I don't do it in the new year, I fail or whatever is not really a great tool for improving. But that kind of introspection and coming up with themes or less rigid goals for yourself for the new year are definitely good. I don't like the idea necessarily, even actually using the word goal just a moment ago. I don't necessarily like the idea of setting it up in a pass-fail kind of way, but definitely thinking back on the year, thinking on what you might like to do in the next year, and having some self-introspection and evaluation is never a bad thing. Next up, Umbra asks, what are future plans after the cleric is released? So I will be compiling my plans and structuring things and coming up with a blog post for it, probably in January this coming year, as I do every year. So I'm afraid you're going to have to wait until that blog post to get a really full, complete understanding. But probably in the immediacy of things, I'm probably going to have a lighter update immediately after the cleric releases, largely so I can respond to any sort of emerging balance issues that the cleric's update causes relatively quickly. I expect I'm probably going to, as the first major content thing, work on a Dwarven City quest, and then there'll be a bunch of other more later in the year things that would be nice to work on, but I haven't decided on those yet. That's probably going to more materialize around the time of the blog post. Next up, MaxiBob asks, if it isn't too personal, what's one of your biggest fears and how has it affected your life, if at all? Obviously, this is a bit of a deep question, so I understand if you're not comfortable answering, but even if there's a minor fear you're willing to share, that would be cool. And also cool if you don't feel comfortable sharing anything at all. So I'm fine with sharing some things, but I hope you can appreciate if I'm being a little vague. Probably the fear that's affected my life the most is the fear of time and running out of time and not accomplishing the things I want to accomplish with my life in whatever amount of time I have. And especially because life is constantly happening, specifically the sort of realize that like not being mindful with time and then suddenly realizing that you're out of it and not having done the things you want. And to be clear, out of time doesn't necessarily mean death. It could just mean that you're in a stage of your life where something you want to do is no longer feasible. And not just for Shattered Pixel Dungeon, but with game dev, I've obviously been somewhat motivated by that. And it's interesting how these things go because that's sort of transforming a little now into the fear of, again, it's still related to time, but of being perhaps a little too hyper-focused on a subset of things and therefore neglecting other things as time continues to constantly tick away. I have to be a bit generic about that because, yeah, obviously it does relate to Shattered in game dev a bit, but it also relates to personal stuff as well. So I'm certainly not meaning to imply that I think the work I've done on Shattered has been a mistake or anything like that. Goodness, no. It's more complicated than that. But yeah, that's sort of probably my greatest fear in a vague nutshell, the passage of time. Next, Ultraviolet Light asks, is there anything you thought players wouldn't be able to abuse, but ended up being very common? If so, what was it? And MaxiBob kind of interject a little here and jokes about the bomb identification. And bomb identification is definitely a good example, but it's also a bit of a weird one because I knew that people using bombs in that way was fairly common, but I mistakenly thought it was primarily, or the primary value for them was in clearing out inventory burden and not in totally circumventing the identification system. So I guess in that sense, I didn't realize. And then speaking more generally, I guess it partly depends how you define common, because I think the average player probably doesn't really do anything I would consider to be an exploit. But if you start to look more at experienced players, people who are involved in Pixel Dungeon communities and will hear or will see shared things from other people, there are definitely some examples. I'm always surprised by just how far people are willing to go to squeeze a tiny little bit more of passive regen or do out of something. I have had to add limiters to a lot of abilities and effects that I really, really didn't think I would have to. This is, you know, things like the Rejuvenating Steps talent for the Huntress, or even something simple like boss regen in the Goo fight. And the reason why I had to make these changes is actually tying back into making changes specifically for High Chal, is because in high challenges where health is super value, it was technically optimal to, to waste a tremendous amount of your time in extremely tedious gameplay, squeezing every last drop you could out of these things. And that's really, really boring. So I removed those things. I think another example that I actually like, you could call it an exploit, I guess, is using things like the Sad Ghost and Noisemaker bombs in combination to sort of infinitely farm by having the ghost fight for you while you just spam wait in another room. That is technically an exploit in the fact that you can set up a really effective farm with it, but I'm okay with allowing that because it's such an interesting and creative solution and does at least require enough setup and is relatively gated in power. But by and large, I'm having trouble thinking of things that sort of became common while I wasn't aware of them, because generally I will catch wind of these sort of things reasonably quickly and fix them because I do not want them to become common, with some exceptions. I guess one other exception would be the Necromancer playstyle, which on the face of it, is definitely an exploit, but is very interesting, and so I have decided to keep that. And lastly, to round us out here, Radiant Chaos asks, from today until the end of 2025, I'm going to try to eat one of every item on the McDonald's Canada menu. Do you think I have what it takes? Absolutely, I think you have what it takes. And you know what? If you go through with it by the end of next year, you'll probably be a few pounds stronger too. Go get them. but seriously, if you're just, I don't actually know how many items are on the McDonald's Canada menu, and it may be an entirely reasonable amount of McDonald's to eat in a year, but if it's not, please don't eat a bunch of McDonald's on my account, thank you. And that does it for this month's audio Q&A. I am recording this, I think I said already, on the 25th, but it's pretty late, so I am going to put this up on the 24th. I hope you all have a very happy holidays, and you will hear from me again next year. And also next month.